Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, look for the two words, Start Here, in the upper left-hand corner. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. Well, I'm sorry, that was if you go to your app store, you can type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the reality management worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. If you get back to the website and you click on the link that says Start Here, it will let you go to a page that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, which is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And you can download it and read that there. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to them, they can serve as a tutorial for you to how to use this tool. Alternatively, you can call in the internet show if you've got any comments, questions, or you'd like to be stepped through a worksheet. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and it will let us turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. We help people do that because it helps us live into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. There are a whole host of other tools available on the website at whyagain.org, and you'll be led to them if you click on the Start Here link. But there are also a new video on the website that Jeannie has made to help people navigate the complexities of this website, because they've been building it and building on it for years. They have many pages of resources. And so at the request of several rather intelligent people who were having difficulty navigating the website, Jeannie decided to create this tutorial video. So there's one video that will help you navigate the website. There's another video that will help you navigate the app, and you can access those from the first page of the whyagain.org website. Alternatively, if you want to get a hold of us and you're not calling in live, if you're listening to the internet show on the archive, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And We're happy to take your call and entertain your comments, your questions, your answers, your testimonials, or even your refutations. Sometimes some of the best shows, some of the best discussions that happen in the support groups come when people say, you know, this is hogwash. This isn't real. That's not how my life is. That's not how I experience it. I can't do this. This doesn't work for me. And through the process of discussing someone else's experience and allowing for the fact that sometimes people do need different resources, we grow in our own understanding of ourselves and our use of the tools and the places where we might have blind spots or be stuck. So feel free to call in and raise a hand, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. Through our work in this past year, we're closing in on a year. We started on January 10th. We've been working through the Way of Mastery, and we're approaching the Way of Mastery as a set of tools, as a set of teachings that hold great value, and as such, they're worthy of being read very slowly and carefully and often reread, and that the exercises that are suggested are worth spending the time to play with, to try them out. And yesterday we began the reading of Lesson 32. And there are only 35 lessons in the first three books. The first book is titled The Way of the Heart. It has 12 lessons. The second book is titled The Way of Transformation. It has 12 lessons. And the third book is titled The Way of Knowing, and it has 11 lessons, for a total of 35. And one of the things that J.M. talks about when he's the individual who received this work, and one of the things he talks about is how the more he works with these tools and these readings, the deeper his experience goes, the deeper his comprehension goes. And if you're working with tools like this and you keep working with them, each time you come back to them to reread them or try an exercise, there are ways in which you are literally a different person. You know, every bit as much as I'm a very different person today in some respects than I was in fifth grade. I'm a very different person today in some very real respects than I was when I completed my doctorate in clinical psychology. In some respects, in a very real way, I'm a different person this year than I was last year at this time. Now, I'm not saying that all of those changes in my life are due to one book or one set of teachings. It's due to the passage of time. It's due to life events. It's due to friends coming and going in my life. It's due to interactions with family. And yet, as I have life experiences, I change. I change my view of life. I change my understandings. I change what I value from time to time. And a book like this is calling us to deeper and deeper levels of change in those things that are changeable. The book is also talking about that part of you that never changes, that part of you that is connected to your creator, that part of you that was here before there was any material substance, your consciousness, your intelligence, your spirit, your soul, your light, whatever you want to call it. And so while I have both aspects of my experience of life. As I've been raised in the Western world, I've been taught to focus almost exclusively on the physical and what my five physical senses can show me. And I've been taught next to nothing about the truth of that part of me that never changes, that part of me that, well, that's the best way to say it, the part of me that never changes, who I am, my essence. And so the more we use tools like the ones that are recommended here, the more we grow into an experience of our true nature and that part of us that never changes, and the more we withdraw our value from all of those things of the physical world and certain aspects of day-to-day relationships, and the more that happens, the more the part of us that's so invested in our size and our shape and our bank account and our possessions, the more that part of us is going to fight back, kick up a fuss, go into resistance, go into fear, go into, you know, complex theories about how this book and Yeshua are dragging me into demons' work or whatever. Because, as Guy Finley would talk about, the mechanical level of mind just churns and does what it always does. It doesn't have awareness beyond its mechanical march to perpetuate itself. It's kind of like a perpetual motion machine or a dishwasher that never gets unplugged or runs out of energy and the parts never wear out. It just keeps churning. And so when that part of our mind that has become identified with aspects of our personality, our thoughts about ourselves, our size, our shape, our bank account, our possessions, when that part of the mind begins to become aware that it's no longer the most important thing to our higher self, to our true self, it pours more energy into trying to keep its position, its priority. And it may do that through what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence, which means using a process of thought, and in the misapplication of that conscious logical thought, I create a problem for myself at the spiritual or emotional level, and then I decide to keep using that thought process while telling myself that if I do more of it, it will alleviate the problem that was created by doing it in the first place. And I can never... Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem at the level of mind that created the problem or at which the problem was created. So as we draw to a close, what I've noticed as I've been reading these last few lessons is that my mind is showing me all the different ways that people I know, people I interact with in the support groups, people that I know listen to the internet show, my mind is showing me many, many different ways that people and their minds might be fighting against what is being discussed or offered or shared in these lessons. Essentially, what the way of knowing as a set of teachings is drawing us to is knowing that our true self is not dependent at any level upon the physical, upon what the five senses show us. And the more we're willing to work with that, experiment with it, experience it, the more real it's going to become. And the more real it becomes, the more that automatic part of our mind that's been conditioned to think it is the most important is going to kick up a fuss, is going to throw up resistance, is going to, you know, it's been my experience in the past 6 months, let's say, especially the last 3 months, that the more people I know that are going along on this journey, the more I'm hearing from people, it's harder and harder for me to do worksheets. It's harder and harder for me to keep up with the lessons. And one possible reason for that, aside from the individual dynamics in each of our lives, one possible reason is, that's what Guy Finley talks about in one of his talks. He says, here's a seed. Any kind of seed, take any kind of seed, and it just sits there dormant. And yet when the conditions are right, when the temperature is right, when the light is right, when the moisture is right, and the life energy awakens in this seed begins to change from the inside. And the greatest moment, the greatest pressure, the greatest intensity of resistance comes right before the seed bursts open and the sprout begins to come out. And the pressure and the tension is within the material inside the seed. It's within the sprout itself. I used to be absolutely fascinated when I would go out on bike paths and quote, nature trails that had been paved in the spring. And I would see these eruptions in the blacktop, in the pavement. And I would go over very, very curious about, well, what is so powerful that it can erupt through the blacktop? And I would get off my bike or my rollerblades or whatever I was on, and I would be just flabbergasted to see, here's this tiny little green plant that has pushed through the blacktop. Now, this is blacktop that even if I had a shovel, I would have a hard time hacking through it. And yet, if I take the little green plant and use my fingers, I can squish it or twist it and snap it as easy as my next breath. And so I got absolutely fascinated with this, and I started to do research about how is it that this fragile little sprout or plant can push through asphalt, blacktop. And what my research led me to was that within the cellular structure of the sprout, as it's developing, it develops a level of pressure equal to 400 atmospheres. In other words, 400 times more pressure than you feel on your hand when you just stick your hand out in midair. The weight of the air on your hand, which we're so accustomed to, it feels like nothing. But, you know, it's the weight of the atmosphere. And within the cells of the little sprout, it develops 400 times the pressure of our atmosphere at sea level. That's the pressure that grows inside the seed before it bursts through its shell. That's the kind of pressure many of us are going to feel as we try to do these exercises, as we try to fully move into the way of knowing. Because in the way of knowing, the shell, the crust, the personality, the construct of ideas that we thought we were and that had value is being shown to be valueless. Or perhaps more accurately, to have a very different less central value in our lives than we had previously been conditioned to believe. So we have our challenges here. We have our own challenges that we're going to face in our day-to-day lives, and we're going to face other challenges as we continue to read. And the degree of the pressure or challenge that we face is going to be directly proportional to how much we try to fully, deeply comprehend what's being suggested, what we're being invited to observe. Because let's face it, you could read through this book in a week or two and just read it as a bunch of words and not do any of the exercises and not think very heavily about any of the phrases, and it wouldn't create any challenge for you whatsoever. Yet if you accept the invitation to move from your intellectual mind into your awakened heart space, and then learn to question everything you've been taught and observe for yourself what is most useful for you in terms of a set of tools for staying consciously connected to your source as love or the creative energy, and you move through this set of lessons in that way, there will be pressure. There will be change. So just to back up just a little bit from where we were yesterday, we were reading this lesson, The Way of Knowing, lesson 32, and the title of it is The Longing of the Soul is to Know Love. We were asking the question, the only important question is, are you willing to make the journey from fear to love as you look upon anything, any experience, and any emotion? And so it's asking, are you willing to say, yes, my dog just died. Yes, my husband just left me. And still look on it from the perspective of love, understanding your true nature as love and extending love to everyone and everything in that circumstance. Because the text says, these events, my dog dying, my husband leaving me, my bank account being empty, these are just the external forms bouncing about in the field of energy that's always changing. But the essence of who I am has not left me, for I remain free to extend love. I remain free to make the energetic transition from one set of circumstances into the present moment. I'm free in each moment to choose love over fear. I choose to drop the fear that is a conditioned response in me. The way the text reads, it says, I'm free in each moment not to abide in fear, not to abide in that great fear that I can't possibly survive because my, quote, my teddy bear has been stolen, close quotes. But then the text asks, but what are my husbands, my wives, my mates, my careers, my cars, my money in the bank, if they are not the attempt of the little child within me to have and hold on to that teddy bear, that artificial external comfort, that thing that I think can comfort me? Which, of course, it can't, except for a temporary illusion. Yet all the while, the Christ within me can extend love. The Christ within you can extend love, can realize its true nature as love and extend that energy of love in every interaction with everyone and everything in your life. In each moment that you seem to be confronted with the challenge that brings up within you your deepest fears of security, your deepest fears of, quote, managing the estate, close quotes, the domain that you call your, quote, life, close quotes. Each of these challenges do not come by accident. And they must come without ceasing in a world where change is constant. For all you look upon and say that you love, that you perceive as a temporary form of creation, all of it is already dying and dead to you. There can be no peace in the material world based on the material world, because the material world is constantly changing. However, you can be the embodiment of peace when you look beyond all form and you perceive the essence of all things as the longing for love and the longing to remember. When your spouse leaves you, no matter what they say, they are leaving you because they long for love. And does this mean that you have failed them? Absolutely not. For that would mean that they are a victim of you. But you've heard me say to you many times, there is no cause in life except for that which arises within the field of the sovereignty of each soul. Each soul creates their own experience. Love, the energy of creation, is always present, and there is no reason for staying or going. There is only reason to awaken to the voice for love and to allow it, the voice for love, to move you. So in the world of the material, you cannot find peace, for in the world there is only the deep belief that love is absent and love must be sought, it must be pursued, it must be gotten, it must be extracted. From the forms of creation, whether it be a career, a flower, an ocean, a desert, a lover, a mate, or money. And yet the forms of the world contain no actuality, no reality. By that I mean, when you look at someone or something, and the energy of wanting to possess or extract runs you, you're already in insanity. Insanity is completely illusory, which means any attempt to live from that energy can only fail. Yet, at the very moment, the world awaits you in perfect transparency, and nothing can obstruct you. In the busiest of your malls, in the most horrendous traffic jam, there is nothing that is preventing you from choosing to remember only your loving thoughts. There is nothing preventing you from choosing to look upon a brother or a sister and to see their perfect innocence, to see their unchanging essence, while allowing them complete freedom to be on their journey as they must, until they elect to remember that essence within themselves, until they've chosen to learn to be the stillness of the creation's presence. And stillness is not opposed to activity. Rather, it pervades the very body-mind. There is a quality of stillness in the awakened that is ever attractive. And yet the awakened are ceaselessly involved. Why? Because they no longer resist the flow of this dream world, including the body-mind. They have reversed the thought structure of the world within themselves. And the body-mind is no longer compelled by fear. Unobstructed, it serves but one purpose, the extension of love. Can you extend love by restraining the energy of the body? No. Can you extend love by holding on to rigid thoughts and beliefs about how relationships should be? No. The only way to remember, capital L, love, the only way to rest in the certainty of the way of knowing is to come to the realization that what is not love is fear, and only fear. In any moment of experience, regardless of what is occurring, where love is not present with you as a known commodity, you are in fear. Now, we do not speak here of the emotion or the wave of energy that might be passing through the body when you walk around the corner of a hiking trail and behold a very angry mother grizzly bear who will protect her cubs by having you for breakfast. Those are just emotions passing through the body-mind part of the system that would help you to flee or to stay. Do not make the mistake of perceiving that as fear. It is just a biochemical, electrical impulse programmed into the body-mind. For even the wise and enlightened person will pay attention to that. And yet, the wise and enlightened will look quickly and possibly say, well, perhaps this is my time. Go ahead, bear, eat me. Go ahead, crucify me. Or perhaps the very same enlightened one will say, take me from the city. The crowds are too great. We must flee across the lake, for they would press upon me and eat me up if they can. It is not time, and this is not the place. Close quotes. Peace, then, is not passivity. Peace, the very state of love, is a state in which no experience is obstructed within you. Do not make the mistake, as many do, of thinking that experience has something to do with what is outside of your very body-mind. For remember, nothing is caused by a single event occurring beyond the boundary of the body-mind. If two human beings come together, they may not know why, but for some reason their heart is open. They are walking around with a neon sign that says, quote, I just want to love and be loved. That is the only reality. I am a little tired of putting up a wall of resistance, close quotes. They walk around the corner and, oh my goodness, the sparks fly. And they say, oh, love, this is it. It's the real thing. Oh, my God, how could this be? Or, oh, this must be a gift from the Creator. All of that is nonsense. It is a gift from yourself. You are the one who chose in the depths of your being to finally become sane enough to allow the content for the experience of love's sharing to be called to you. And guess what? It is occurring in your lover for the very same reason. Two souls have sent out the call and have come together in a field of space-time within the body-mind for a moment in which each has said yes to the possibility of remembering the purity of love. Love does not condemn, and love does not judge. What is not love is fear and nothing else. What is not love is fear and nothing else. Therefore, remember always that no act of love should ever be judged, for each act of love is to be cherished. Each moment of love's presence and actuality or reality is to be cherished. Each moment in which a soul, two souls, three souls, 10 souls, a whole country of souls, a universe of souls, it does not matter. Each moment in which a soul makes the choice to drop the defenses, to open and gesture as the presence of love, that act is to be cherished, for it is rare in the world. Those that would seek to possess a mate, to create an exclusivity, are truly only expressing some level of fear. Love denies not to anyone the perfect freedom that is the sovereignty and right of every soul. For you cannot know capital L love until you have set all beings free. You cannot know your Creator until you love as your Creator loves. And there is no one who is reading these words that does not long to know love, capital L love, completely, and to come home again. So it strikes me as quite apropos that I was moved to talk about the pressure and the pressure of resistance, the pressure of resistance that comes when change is about to happen and there's a part of me that doesn't want to change. If I've spent my entire life being conditioned to think that I should only have one special person in my life that I love with all of my heart and soul and being, and only one person that I share the body-mind with, and a teaching like this comes along and says, it is entirely possible and highly recommended that you learn to extend that level of energy, of creation, of love, of acceptance, of embracing, of allowing with everyone and everything you interact with. Just watch what gets resonated in you when someone asks you to question the very foundations of your belief systems about God, light, love, relationship, sex, fidelity, trust, any aspect of relationship or marriage. If you're like most of us, every time you hold a belief and it gets challenged, it shakes the foundations of your sense of being. And a pressure will be felt. And of course, the egoic mind will instantly throw up all kinds of negativity and resistance and reasons why this shouldn't be happening, and will probably, if you're like most people I've heard talk about this kind of thing, they'll jump right into thoughts about promiscuity and, orgies and just debauchery and people being drunk and high and having sex parties and, victimizing people, and that's where the mind will go. And yet there's none of that contained in this teaching. The teaching has remained consistent from the first lesson in page 5, where it says, the beginning of this pathway is to allow this thought into your mind, this axiom of truth. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Now, how is that relevant here? Well, what it's saying is, if you have a relationship with someone, if you take a lover, if you take a husband or a wife, and then they decide to leave, and you go through all kinds of pain and fear and sadness and upset, you're the one creating that pain and fear and sadness and upset. The fact of a person leaving your life doesn't create pain and fear and sadness and upset. And the way I call people to observe this for themselves is because other people come and go in their lives all the time, and they don't create all that pain and fear and sadness and upset. As a matter of fact, if you had a bully in your life at your place of work or in your school, and they all of a sudden got transferred to another school, you wouldn't be upset that they were leaving. So it's not the actuality of someone either coming into your life or leaving your life that creates your upset. It's the meaning you give it. It's the interpretation you create and place on that event that generates your experience. And this work has remained consistent to that from the beginning and invites us to examine it for ourselves. And it doesn't tell us what to do, right or wrong, good or bad, stay in a relationship, leave a relationship. It's simply calling us to understand more accurately, to observe more directly what is the nature of that relationship. How is it limited and constricted if I think I need something from the other person in order to feel love or to feel safe or to feel value? What does it do to respect and the energy of love or creation when I insist that a person act a certain way or be in a certain place or dress in a certain way or say certain things in order for me to be happy? And how directly opposite is that from what this teaching says about extending complete freedom to everyone and everything that you see and experience and every soul you interact with? So the next section is titled Coming Home to Love. And it says, to come home, in quotes, come home, close quotes, means to know love. And to know, capital L, love, means that you can no longer tell where you end and the Creator begins. Such a one merely extends love. Such a one rests in the perfect certainty of love so deeply that the thought of restricting another person's freedom cannot arise. Why would it? If your cup is truly overflowing, would you require another to place their half-filled glass before you, demanding that you need to possess their glass? Love allows all things. Love embraces all things. Love trusts all things and thereby immediately transcends all things. If you would know love, capital L love, spend the next 30 days in which each day without fail, remember that it is wise to use time constructively. Spend the next 30 days in which each day without fail, you spend some time with yourself and a piece of paper and a pencil and truly look back over your past honestly. Where did you refuse to give total freedom to the ever-changing expressions of creation? Now, if one were going to seriously do that, before they sat down with the pen and a piece of paper, they would make a trip to the Office Max store and buy a truckload of reams of paper. But you get the idea. This is an exercise that's calling us to look very, very differently at everything we've been taught. So the text goes on and asks, have you ever judged a politician? In that very moment, you were refusing to extend perfect freedom, for judgment flows from fear and not from capital L love. Were you ever in a relationship in which some part of you felt at least a little urge to try to convince the other person that they do not really love that person that they met at the supermarket, that they really just love you instead? Of course, these are tongue-in-cheek because the author of this book knows we've all been through this. Have you ever, even politely for a moment, insinuated to another that their passion for anyone or anything might be out of some sort of biological abnormality? or certainly that they're being insane and they need to sit down and do some serious thinking. All of that is fear and nothing else. For love is satiated in its own being. Love overflows. Thought of possessing, controlling, or limiting can only come from one who feels emptiness. Love sets all things free. Love sets the world free to be as the world is. Love sees perfect harmlessness. Love sees that because things are as they are, they are as they are. Think well about that statement. Because things are as they are, the mind in perfect freedom lets them be as they are and sees them as utterly harmless. Now, as I read that, every time I read that so far in the last few readings of this work, it puts me in mind of Byron Katie's work and the realization that she came through, that she came to through her spiritual awakening, that anything that has happened in her life is perfectly okay because it's already happened. It's been the flow of life. And that she only suffers if she looks at something that has occurred or is occurring in her life and generates judgment or negative thoughts about it, that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts. And that's led her, and if you listen to some of her talks, she's got lots of them on YouTube you can watch. If you listen to her, you'll probably eventually hear her say, if it's happened, it was perfect. And this feeds into the same observation that I make with people in my office when they say, oh, I should have done this. And I interrupt them and I ask if they have a time machine in their pocket. And they say, no, why are you talking about time machines? And I say, well, because unless you have a time machine and you can go back and fix it, you cannot should have this or that because you can't go back and change anything. So the way it happened, it happened. It's done. It's over. There's the opportunity to learn from it. There's the opportunity to choose love in this moment. There's the opportunity to choose love as you think about yourself. There's the opportunity to choose love as you think about that situation and all of the other people involved. There's also the option to choose fear. And what we're being invited to do in this work is choose love over fear with every moment of thought and every breath. The text goes on and reads, love sees that the world that is shown to you through the body-mind, this world of buildings, automobiles, pollution, pristine beaches, desert expanses, towering lakes and trees, ponds, that this world of torment in the mother whose child has just died, this world of torment in the heart of a child who has just buried their parent, this world of peace, this world that contains all possible expressions of consciousness, this world is perfectly harmless. This world that you experience in this now moment cannot add anything to you and cannot take anything away. And they mean this in the highest possible sense. You are whole and complete as you are. There is nothing of value that can be taken from you. There is nothing of value that can be added unto you. The text goes on and reads, in this now moment, where are you? Are you in this energy of love in this moment? Did you just lose your job? And you think the problem is that is disturbing your peace and that you have to, that it's disturbing your peace because you have no job. That is not it. What is disturbing your peace is that the loss of a job has fleshed up for you your deep identity with and as the body. You think the body must survive and continue and perhaps say, darn it, it has to do with the same level of material comfort that I knew yesterday. I've got to maintain that. I can't let anything slip away. This is who I am. Can you understand that when your love, your knowledge of your experience of love itself is so complete, it no longer matters if the body-mind even exists tomorrow? For where would you go? You are but the field of love itself. Your essence is unchanging forever. You are pure spirit. That last statement, you are pure spirit, is so important they spend an entire lesson with that as the title. You are pure spirit. It's up to you, the voice for love, allowing purification, freedom, love under all circumstances. You are pure spirit. Your essence is the energy of creation, consciousness itself. You are one with your creator. The text then goes on and says, if you just lost your job, sit down and breathe and open the heart and decide to extend love to your employer unto the death of your illusion. And then open and receive all that is around you. The singing of the bird, the first rays of the day's new dawn, the grasses beneath your feet. Receive the field of infinite possibilities that has been thrown wide open for you. For that which passes away in your experience cannot do so by accident. It can only be occurring through the complicity or the agreement of the world around you with the soul within you. Nothing arises by accident. Back to the first lesson. You don't experience anything except the effects of your own choice. And then it says, later on that same page, by the way, we're not talking about your intellectual choice. We're talking about your awakened heart's choice. Your capital S, self, soul, consciousness choice. At the point where your mind rests next to the mind of the Creator. Nothing arises by accident. And if you come home to discover that your child has died sleeping in her crib, feel the feelings with great curiosity. This reminds me of the Michael Singer stuff talking about how your heart is an instrument that can play notes that are so intense and so expansive and so subtle and beautiful and so intensely painful, you have no idea. And you can choose to fight against it or you can step back and say, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I didn't know I had the capacity for such pain and suffering and sadness. I didn't know I had the capacity to feel this intensity of love and connection. Joy and bliss. The text says, and if you come home to discover that your child has died sleeping in her crib, feel your feelings. Indeed, feel them with great curiosity. Such as, quote, wow. So this is how a human being feels when they perceive that loss has occurred. I will bring love to this moment, and I will feel this as deeply as I can because I want to embrace it with actuality, with reality, with the essence of creation itself. Then look with gentleness upon that tiny form of lifelessness and know that the soul who animated it for a brief time has gone nowhere except into the furtherance of their destiny and yours, always by perfect agreement. not the kind of an agreement in which the child says, yes, Mom, yes, Dad, whatever you say, but the agreement of the perfect sovereignty of two unlimited souls. You have heard me say before that the spiritual path cannot begin until a mind accepts complete responsibility for the entire field of its experience. This must include the comings and goings of all beings. You will realize, quote, I called them in. I called to them and asked them to leave me. I wonder why I did that. Oh, God, here's this feeling again. I'm all alone. I've been abandoned. Oh, that's why they've had to leave me. For I must heal this ridiculous belief that I've been abandoned. I must overcome all illusion of separation. I must awaken beyond the dream of the dreamer, close quotes. Nothing you create can arise by accident. Everything you experience calls you to the field of unchanging and perfect love that transcends, supersedes, and underlies all that arises and passes away. Like I said, it's just not, obviously now, it's obvious to me that it's not a coincidence that I was moved to talk about the pressure that will build in us as we entertain these thoughts, as we explore these observations for ourselves, as we question everything we thought we knew about relationship and commitment and love and our true nature. Just as the pressure is greatest in the seed right before the sprout emerges. Just as the little green plant that you can pinch with your finger and fingernail can develop over 400 atmospheres of pressure and push its way up through asphalt and concrete. The pressure will be greatest right before the opening to the new, right before the release and the realization of growth and the extension of the creative energy, unrestricted. So that's our offering for today. Grateful to everyone who's chosen to stay with us and listen and question this for yourselves. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, December the 14th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while I'm waiting on Michael to dial in, a couple of things that we were just kind of looking at and talking about this morning. And one of them is I told him that I had looked up or used a calculator on the online how many hours we had been doing the radio show. He mentioned that yesterday. And we began just doing 1 hour from January 31st, 2011. Until now, and then March the 4th, 2019, is when Dr. Tim decided to or agreed to do another hour from 12 to 1, and then we did from 1 to 2. So adding all of that together, we have 4,084 hours of radio shows. And the lady who we houses our website on her domain, she actually, I don't remember how big, 3 terabyte, 5 terabyte hard drive. And so she has been backing up the radio shows onto that hard drive so that if something happened, cancel the thought, but if something happened that Blog Talk decided to get rid of archived shows, we do have a backup of all of our shows. So we have done that. And then we were also looking that we have 88 videos on YouTube, and they've had over 48,409 views on all of those. A lot of people, you know, they view it, but then they don't click like or make a comment or anything like that. So, you know, we're going to ask that if you are out there and you look up some of the YouTube videos or you watch them, you know, click a like. Same thing, you know, like on the Facebook pages. Or we were also looking at, let me flip back over to my notes where Michael and I were talking this morning. On the radio show, just since we've been on our own, you know, when we first started in January of 2011, we were being hosted by Carol Guy. And so she had Earth Angels Radio, and later she changed it to Enlightened Masters Radio. And it was September 1st, 2016, when we went on our own. So there's 5 years that I don't have the records of, but since we've been on our own, we have had over 49,296 people that are all-time listens. So that's awesome. And we were looking at some of the stats, and 70% or close to 71% of the audience is from the United States. We have almost 15% in Australia, and that's where Bob is, who is with us almost all the time. We have 4.25% in the United Kingdom. We have 2% in Kenya and almost 2% in France. So that was pretty interesting to see that, visitors from different countries. And then they have a stats graph that kind of shows us, and it looks like most of the listens are done either on Apple Podcast or, and then the second in line was Blog Talk Radio itself. And then it sorted it by browsers, whether it was Firefox or Stitcher or Edge, where the listens were taking place. And then they gave us a list of downloads and streaming. And, you know, so it was really interesting to look at some of the stats of the show. So we hope that, you know, and also, you know, in the beginning, I didn't keep notes on all of the shows. So there are a lot of shows that have no notes. So if you happen to listen to one that doesn't have any notes on their website, you know, drop me a line and give me just kind of a short paragraph of what that topic was that day. And I'll add it to the notes. And so that'll help if people go to do a search and they want to hear a radio show that's talking about, you know, codependency, or if they want to listen to one that's talking about relationships. So it helps to have notes in there that they can, that'll pop up in a search engine. So let us know. That's one way you can help us out. And I did talk to Susan, who hosts our website on her domain, and she's back working on the shop, and she's also, we're going to have a coupon because we have gotten, you know, the people that used to warehouse our product went out of business, and so they shipped everything. We've got it here in a storage unit. And most people are doing streaming and downloading and not actually getting physical DVDs or CDs. So we're going to be doing we're going to classify it as a Heartland maintenance fundraiser and have special deals on the hard copies of DVDs and CDs. So be watching for that. I'm going to be sending out a newsletter probably in the next day or two. So if you're not on their mailing list, go to our website, whyagain.org, and scroll to the bottom where it says join our mailing list and make sure that you're on there, and that way you will get it. If by chance you miss it, you can always go to the website, and under multimedia, there is a section that says news and newsletters. If you click on that, there are links to all of the past newsletters that we have done, so you can always download them and look at them. So we will be sending that out, and so watch for that and our Merry Christmas news and what's going on. And I am now going to welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Thanks for going over all of that. It's kind of cool to have a look at those numbers and see that we, of the ears we know of, we've hit at least 100,000 pairs. So that's pretty cool over the last, since 2016. And who knows what, you know, outside of that, and of course, the travel work we've done. But our request, especially since we're not traveling anymore and we're here, is one of the reasons for sharing that with you is to ask for your support. And when you go click a like, that's one thing. And it will, on YouTube especially, it will help us at some point perhaps to what they call monetize our channel so that, you know, all of our content there is free. But if YouTube sees enough activity, they'll actually begin to support us with payment for the activity without there being a charge to anybody for the content. So if you would, you know, even if you put it on your calendar and maybe once a week spend a few minutes, you know, what's this, how is this serving you? Is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Maybe you spend an hour a week or a month or whatever, or once in your lifetime, and just grab some of those links that you found meaningful and send them off to somebody. You know, just send people a link on a regular basis. The 100,000 or so hits that we've gotten are from people who've done that, you know, just sort of because they liked it or wanted to pass it on and the efforts we put out to put it out there. But there's so many pieces of literally million-dollar content, life-changing content that we would like to put into more hands. And of course, we have the resources that Jeannie and I have. We don't have some big corporate sponsor. Or, you know, nobody pays us to do this radio show, and nobody pays us to do anything we do except those who benefit from it and choose to support it. So if all of that seems worthy to you and is serving you, we invite you to step in. We have a couple of major expenses. Actually, we've been holding off on it, even though the roof is leaking on one of our housing buildings at Heartland. It's a pretty expensive fix. And so if you're up for supporting it, go to YGAN.org and click the donate button. That would be awesomely helpful. And pass on the links, you know, share the tools. One of the most watched videos, well, actually two of them, are in June we did a three-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and it just lays out the whole body of work. So, you know, jump on that one, take a look at it, share it with someone, share it with everyone, share it with anyone, put it on your Facebook page, send it out in your email, put it at the bottom of your email, however, whatever you do. The other most watched, and thanks to Bill Costantino, and Bill was a student in a teacher's training back, geez, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, Jeannie, and he was a corporate trainer before that, or part of his profession is as a corporate trainer. And so when he started to grasp the, he'd been involved in this work for several years and had a support group in one of the Unity churches up in Michigan. And he contacted me one day and said, you know, I'd like to do a PowerPoint. That's one of his fortes. I'd like to do a PowerPoint on the forgiveness process. And so Bill and I spent about a year going back and forth, and he translated everything into a PowerPoint so people can build the brain cells for how this whole process works. So that's another video that I think that one was almost 10,000 views. So it's gotten out there, and hopefully it helps people understand why one would do such a silly thing as take a perfectly good goal and cancel it. And understanding, you know, how and why the forgiveness process works, I very clearly realize why the Greeks turned it backward, because it's not easy to understand. In fact, I taught the Aramaic forgiveness technology, which to the mind appears totally backward, for just about 35 years before I finally understood, oh, putting all the pieces together, you know, how resonance works, how the mind works, how perception works, how the body-mind unit works, how forgiveness works, what part goals have in it. You know, if you can't put all that technology together, you don't understand forgiveness. And, you know, the Greeks didn't understand it. Thousands of years, the church never understood it. Because if you go into most churches today, they'll tell you that, well, you know, forgiveness is a good thing for you, but you just let them off the hook for what's happening to you, for causing your pain. Of course, that's the one world religion of blame. It's all everybody else's fault. What actual forgiveness does is bring people back to not only personal responsibility, but personal awareness of what it is in them that's contributing to their pained perception, and that this genius mind 2,000 years ago, and I haven't seen it anywhere else on the planet, nowhere else on the planet does this piece of technology just that I know of. I know we were out in California back, maybe 14, 15 years ago, or actually we were in Washington State. We were coming up from California, and we're rolling along the road. And usually when we would be traveling, you know, we'd be one weekend and a week of workshops in one city, and we'd plan it so it was close enough so we could be in the next city. We'd finish, you know, maybe Friday night and then be in the next city Sunday morning, Friday night, Sunday morning, Friday night. So we didn't have many holes in our schedule, and we were driving up the highway in middle California, and I got an email from a woman who said that her teacher, who was a Buddhist monk, had been sick and been to a healing center. And this healing center had all my videos. And though he was finished with his treatment, he wouldn't leave till he'd watched all of the videos. And he wanted to meet me. Now, this man is considered to be, in the Buddhist tradition, the confirmed reincarnation of the Buddha of wisdom. So they, in that system, they have different Buddhic strengths. And this was the man who was considered to be, you know, one of the wisdom keeper. And so we got that. I contacted her, and we were, I forget exactly, but 3 or 4 hours from the center that he had started. He's now, I understand, in Hong Kong. But he had actually bought a Western town that had been built for a movie set and abandoned and turned it into a center. And we were 3 or 4 hours away, and we had a couple of days off. We were, you know, heading to, if I remember correctly, I think it was Seattle. And so we contacted her and said, well, you know, we're on our way through there. Why don't we come by and visit? We ended up meeting with this gentleman who was just the sweetest little Tibetan man, just awesome gentleman. And we taught the forgiveness work to him. We literally did the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop with him, just one-on-one, personally. And then when we completed that, he really understood it. One of the things he said was, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, when we were in Tibet, we had no need for this. This was not anything that we even entered our awareness. But since the Chinese abuse and coming to America, it's technology we don't have in the Buddhist world and we need. So we, at that point, had an open invitation, and we'd been back there a couple of times. Anytime we were in his neck of the woods, so to speak, he was like, contact us, we'll set aside what we're doing, come and teach. And so after teaching it to him, I ended up, he invited me and asked if we would teach it to everybody that was in his community. This was people from all over the world that came to study with him. When we completed, we were heading back up the road, and there were two cities. So his center was in Oregon. You know, we'd gone through California, he was in Oregon. And let's see, there was Portland, and do you remember what the other city was, Jeannie? It was a smaller town that was closer to his center.
Eugene,
Oregon. Yeah, so he had centers in Eugene and Portland and asked us if we would go and teach the Why Is This Happening to Me Again work there, which we did. That next night we spoke in Eugene, and then the next night he came up as well, and the Eugene people were mostly English-speaking, but in Portland, there's, I guess, a fairly large Tibetan community, so they were mostly Tibetan. So at this point, Tempo, professor was the name, what they called him, had been through the Why Is This Happening to Begin workshop, let's see, 1, 2, 3 times. And then we went to Portland, and it was really pretty awesome. I wish we had a video of it, because I taught the workshop in English, and then he would take, you know, I'd do a section of it, and then he would translate it and teach it in Tibetan. It was really pretty awesome. But his take was, we have nothing like this in the Buddhist tradition. And it's so important, you know, we haven't been out that way very, very often since, but had this open invitation. Actually, they did a conference somewhere in the Southwest. I don't remember where it was, back about 2 years ago, but with Jeannie's dad and the baby, we weren't in a position to travel out there, but they were like, would you come out and teach? And unfortunately, that didn't work into our calendaring. But, you know, there are so many communities in the world have no access to this understanding of this technology whatsoever. And, you know, as soon as quickly as it was presented, if you look at the man named Paul, who's kind of the primo carrier of Yeshua's message, you'll notice that he didn't have a clue about forgiveness. You notice that it became about forgiving others. And you can witness that by just listening to what Paul says about his own life, where he says, why is it the things I would not do, the things I hate are what I do, and the things I would not do, or pardon me, that I would do, I cannot do. He had no idea how to remove the behavior prompts that compelled him to behaviors that he owned that he hated. Like, you know, I may have said that one. Boy, I'm never going to do that again. And you don't until the next time the stress is up and the chips are down, right? And the power person dynamic kicks in and choice is gone and you do what's in your mind to do. And without the technology to remove from your mind what's in your mind to do, every time that stressor, that set of circumstances occurs, that's the behavior that's going to pop out because it's in there until it's removed. And oftentimes those behaviors have been things that have been implanted. They're so overwhelming that they've been, because they've been implanted generation after generation after generation, and then environmentally reinforced by the power person dynamics in each generation's family system, mother and father, child, mother and father, child, on and on it goes. And yet to recognize kinds of development that it takes, the kind of work that it takes to comprehend. You know, the thought, maybe Magda's out there listening. If you are, Magda, maybe you would share just a little bit about the, you know, I've acknowledged you before on the show for the depth of the work that you've been doing and the results you've been getting. And if you're out there listening, Magda, and it seems appropriate, I think it'd be really cool to come on and share just what happened in your Still Point Breathing session in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club, and the result that you shared with us last night in the study group.
I'm gonna turn her microphone on. I'm not sure if she's at a position where she can talk, but she can tell us if she's not. Hello, Magda.
Yeah, she might be working on something or what have you. Hey there, young lady. I know that I think she leaves the phone on and is working around the property, and they have always lots to go at the same time, so she may not even be at the phone. But just a thought, if she happened to be there, it was so powerful, the opening and the sweetness of the opening that occurred. A couple of people in that Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Club really got some nice openings on Saturday. One gentleman who had done an intensive at Heartland back about 28, 29 years ago, kind of came back to the work Saturday to handle some overwhelm he had going on, and just was able to crack through some major, major traumas in his life. In any event, if you're out there in listener land and this makes sense to you and it's supporting you, we invite you to support us in whatever way is possible. And it might be just dedicating some time to send links out to people. Maybe you could do some research on who some important people are, you know, maybe business leaders, church leaders, political leaders, and send them links to, hey, here's something that could change this dynamic in our community, you know, maybe to the mayor or to one of the aldermen or town council members or, you know, deacons of the church or priests or minister or rabbi. You know, if everyone would that participates would put a little bit of thinking into what centers of influence could they contact and put some energy into that, you know, maybe that 100,000 figure by the end of next year would be 2 million, could easily be. And, you know, recognizing at this point, it's Jeannie and I, that's it. We're doing everything we can to develop the tools to create support. You know, sometimes you've probably in the past heard me talk about how we're kind of like the person at the circus who spins the plates. And, you know, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 plates spinning, and you got to keep every one of them moving. And then, well, we're going to start another one. And it's kind of fun. I get letters or phone calls or emails from people all the time say, well, here's a project you should do. It's like, okay, so now that you suggested it, would you be willing to take it on? Because here I am, I and Jeannie are spinning every plate we can. And yes, you know, Jeannie took on a major new plate about 5 years ago in developing the app. Nobody will ever know how many, I can't even quantify, tens of thousands of hours have gone into, you know, the website, at, you know, just over 20,000 pages and what it takes to design, develop that. And then back, 10 years ago, we did a total redesign, total upgrade to a new operating system, had to revamp everything. And then, you know, 8, 9 years later, it needed to be done again. So it's another major upgrade, which, you know, we're still catching links that are broken and that sort of thing from that last upgrade where we changed the software that we used. So, you know, it's major to do. And if it feels like you're gaining from it and you'd like to support it, then, you know, it'd be wonderful if you'd find a way to. You got some spare change hanging around, or you got a tax break that you need for the end of the year, you know, some money you need to get rid of in order to lower your tax rate. Mm-hmm. That can be a moneymaker. And so, in any event, just a little bit of information on where we're going with this. We're working to create a system where this will become available in perpetuity. Everything that we've got from radio shows to workshops to archives of everything, the website and all. So it's a big project. It'd be nice if some corporate sponsor came along and said, hey, I see the impact this is happening and this is worth supporting, so we're going to support it. And, you know, who knows? If you pass it on to somebody, what kind of support might come along to take this to the next level beyond just what Jeannie and I can do in terms of making it available? And, of course, Heartland, our last season there was in 2019, and we had a pretty busy season. Jeannie stayed here with Dad and the baby, and I went out and did the season on my own. Just thinking as I closed the property, I put a pretty good gash in my head doing one of the water pipe shutdowns. That was an interesting process. I walked down to see Julie. I got blood dripping down my face, all over my clothes. It was just, you know, just part of the game. In any event, we haven't opened Heartland since 2019, since COVID hit. And so it's been we've got 17 acres and 15 buildings, and whether we open or not, the taxes go on. The electric bill, you know, runs about $500 a month. The property still needs to be maintained, the grass cut, the leaves raked, those sorts of things. And thank you to Magda for stepping in earlier this season and actually hiring a local lawn person to come in and do some cleanup work on the property. That was really awesome. And thank you to Michael Petty for coming and staying for several months and really working on the property and buildings and roofs and all that. And at this point, there's one of the roofs that's leaking that needs a total replacement, several thousand dollars, and big tax bill coming up. So if you're interested in supporting, we'll invite you to step in and do whatever fits and works for you, however large or small it might be. There might be some kind of project you could take on and assist in doing that. I've actually been thinking about, there's a gentleman who was at Heartland several years ago and put one of the roofs on the building. And as far as contractors out in that area, apparently, I mean, we've had lots of people. We want to buy the property. We want to buy it. I guess moneyed people are moving in. Chuck was telling me the other day that someone he knows there, one of the a person he had asked about maybe doing this roof for us, and he's working on, you know, some moneyed person bought a peninsula and built from scratch a 9,000 square foot home on the lake. And so a lot of the contractors have just evaporated. And that guy said, well, you know, maybe 6 months from now I could do it. And so I've been thinking about contacting one of the fellows who was on the support team a few years ago and did a roof, and seeing if he would accompany if we went out and we did it ourselves, because we're having trouble finding somebody to kick in at a price that makes it reasonable to do. In any event, that's kind of some of the stuff that's going on. And beyond that, you know, the development of new levels of insight, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know, I know that one gentleman who had done a couple of support groups or book studies with Why Is This Happening to Me Again, had responded to one of the shows we did a couple of months ago. He said, sounds like you've got, you know, Why Is This Happening to Me Again 2.0 happening here. And yeah, we're probably up to Why Is This Happening to Me Again 9.0. And looking at, you know, to keep opening the space. I know that in recent months, it's been a race. And, you know, there came a point where it's like, oh, there we go. We got this all in place. We got this all together. And then, you know, you reach the next level and it's like, oh my God, I don't know anything. There's so much to study. There's so much to understand. You know, if you've listened to the stuff we've done on the sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system and blood flow, you know, that's a major piece of understanding. And actually, when we got involved in the Avicen, I went out and bought a course on anatomy and physiology and kind of went back to medical school to refresh. And, you know, when I went to school, there wasn't much focus on microcirculation and the ability of the smallest blood vessels in the body, which are a tenth to a thousandth the thickness of a hair, to deliver blood to the cell. And, you know, so that's been a whole study, a whole new opening, which has then opened into a new understanding of the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, how it relates to the mind, higher faculty. It's just, and it's like, oh my God, I don't know anything. It's just like, we're just starting. There's so much to understand. And I mean, I could literally spend 14 hours a day exploring each piece in order to make this an holistic presentation. One of my doctorates is in holistic philosophy. How does this whole system work together? And it's kind of like taking a quantum leap in challenge in the last couple of years and just pulling on so many different disciplines, from physics to psychology to spiritual psychology to theology to nervous system research to anatomy, physiology. I mean, it's just, there's so much to put together to get this whole overview, this whole picture. And so that's what it's all about, Elfie. And we're delighted to have the opportunity to share with you. And, you know, beyond a pretty meager existence in terms of our own personal spending, everything that comes in goes to how can we create another resource. And as Jeannie said, the person who used to stock, who manufactured, stocked, and shipped our DVDs for us, actually went out of business. And so we've got boxes and boxes and boxes of, you know, all of our workshop DVDs, CDs. And then our printer just shipped us a pallet of Rossipi's books, hundreds of them, hundreds of Enlightenment books, and hundreds, and well, not so many, the rest of our inventory of Healing Children, Loving Children, Julie's book. And so watch for that. We're going to do a fundraiser to see if we can pick up to take care of these expenses at Heartland since it's not operating. And so that's going to be our fundraiser. And basically, if you buy any, we're discounting the CDs and the DVDs. And if you buy any DVD, it will also include a free permanent link to streaming it as well. So you'll have the physical media and without extra charge are usually two separate products, but we're going to meld them together in order to just create a fundraiser to get some of these expenses covered. So we appreciate your listening ears and your willingness to pass this information along, pass a YouTube link, pass a radio show link, pass a link to, you know, Jeannie just did a really awesome 23-minute video on understanding the app, and I learned a lot from that. So that's out there. She did a video on how to navigate the website. So all of those things are there and available, and we plan to keep the catalog expanding and growing and making it available on a global scale. So any assistance you can be in that regard would be awesome. Beyond that, again, our call-in number, if you're listening on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. We do have one intensive product that is available via Zoom. We have a 90-hour video program for self-study now of codependence to interdependence. And that includes why is this happening to me again, healing through relationships, communication, did you hear what I think I said, mind shifters and still point breathing, and codependence to interdependence. And a 90-hour self-study, self-paced study program that includes personal code evaluations pre and post. So that's another way to support us is buy that program. And you can get the whole 90-hour, the amalgamation of two intensives where there's all of the processing work, all of the question and answer, all of the teaching compacted into 90 hours. And the people who've worked it have just been blown away by the level of understanding it goes to and teaching that's there. So if you're interested in advancing your work, there's another way to support us. And financially, there is a cost to that, and it's $600 for the whole 90-hour program. So pretty cheap for 90 hours of the kind of work that's there, some of the openings and the breakthroughs that are there are just awesome. So that's what's happening. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. So we've got 26 minutes. We've got plenty of time. Press one.
So how can we support you? What's on your mind? Maybe we'll just do 30 minutes of silence, Jeannie.
I'm not sure how that'll work for people that just sign on.
30 minutes of silence on a radio show. I guess that would be a little difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So, and I just checked, and there are no questions that we haven't addressed by email or on the website. So,
I have been doing some work on the request that Celinda made about the types of trauma, types of abuse that children go through. And I had mentioned that this particular study had eight, and I haven't located the exact study, but I have been sort of putting a list together from some of the research that I've been doing. And so some of the types of trauma, and one of the things one physician was saying is that a child who's been through these types of abuse that literally their brains shrink by as much as 10% because of the damage that's done. And I'm not talking about physical damage to the brain. I'm talking about, or not strictly physical damage, but emotional and mental trauma. So the types of abuse that I've come up with so far are bullying, community violence, you know, the observation of violence with people that a child doesn't know, but they're out in the community and observe that. Complex trauma. And complex trauma might involve the child that's neglected, and so there's a whole series of traumas involved in that. Disasters, when a child goes through either a personal family disaster or a community disaster. So both of those, community and personal, can be tremendously impactful on child. Early childhood traumas, birth traumas. Intimate partner violence, you know, parents, and the trauma that happens there that oftentimes the child is an observer of, if not also a recipient of. And there's medical trauma that's a sick child. I think back to my childhood and what I put my mother and father through. Oh, my God. Crazy. My apologies to both mom and dad. And then there's physical abuse, refugee trauma. How many kids are, you know, escaping? We've heard from Susan so many times that she volunteers at a refugee center in her community to support adults and children. That, I mean, who knows what that list looks like. And then there's sex trafficking, sexual abuse, and terrorism and violence. So there are definitely a longer list than there ever should have been for children of different types of trauma and abuse. And the beauty of these tools is they undo the blocks. They restore proper connections to physiology and to mental capacity and give a way to remove the quote-unquote chemistry of trauma that resides in the system after the trauma has passed. There are chemical effects, mind energy effects, and so the forgiveness process is about removing those things when you look back and you realize this man that they call the great physician knew how to do that, and that's the process of forgiveness in the Aramaic. So, Miss Jeannie, you've got somebody in the phone queue with a hand up?
We do, and I believe that it is Mr. Michael, 770. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, my friends. How are you doing?
We are rocking. Thank you, Michael. Nice to hear your voice.
Great to be with you all, and wonderful to hear the update earlier. And thanks for your kind words for the small part I could play there at Heartland. And I was excited to hear about the translation of the book into a Chinese, if I remember right.
Chinese, Catherine, that is exciting.
That was neat. Very neat. So basically you have to send the information and the work gets started. Is that right?
That's the process.
That's great.
That's what we're working toward. Yep.
That is huge. We'll be holding space for that. And
yeah, I mean, it makes the work available to, what, about a third of the world's population or maybe even more? I'm not sure exactly what the population of China is and the diaspora of China, you know, people all over the globe. So, yeah, that's very exciting.
Huge, huge, huge.
The last time we had something like that happen was about, was that maybe 4 years ago, Jeannie? We got letter or an email from a gentleman in Denmark, and we had no idea. We never met him and didn't know him. And Jeannie gets an email, and he says, "Hey, I found your book online free, and I read it, and I started doing these worksheets. Changed my life, so here's the translation of the book into Dutch." So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
It is. So what's on your mind today? Any questions for you? I know the last time we talked, you had a lineup of questions. We covered a couple of them. Can we support you today?
Yes,
what's on your mind?
Yes, and I, of course, got a long list. Something today, I've actually been thinking about it for a little bit. We hear of many people, Bruce Lipkin and many others, that talk about, you know, even way before I was introduced to you and your work, your group's work, I heard about things like to change the way we're thinking, to reprogram the subconscious, and then some speak about retraining the amygdala, the part of the, if I'm remembering right, that's the part of the brain that is memory. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Amygdala. Okay.
At least partially responsible for memory, yes.
Memory. And I, did some research way back and thought, well, these sound like legitimate avenues. And just wanted to ask your thought on some of this, especially when it comes to retraining the amygdala, if you what you might be thinking there as I look at some of the things I'm dealing with and think, wow, that might be an avenue. So those thoughts bounced, off of you, along with how the first century MA forgiveness process fits into all that, please.
Okay. Well, it's a long question. And, the starting point for me would be, first of all, understanding that we don't have a physical body. There's no such thing as the amygdala. There's no such thing as the brain. But that all of these things are energy, exist as energy interpreted by the mind as things. First order of business is let's tell ourselves the truth. If we think there's a physical body part, we're mistaken. If we listen to Einstein says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. And those who are materialists who don't have access to anything beyond their senses are preoccupied with the so-called physical world. When we start to see things in terms of energy, when we start to see things in terms of, so this is an energy system, there are energies that if you bring it in, it will tear it down, and there are energies that if you remove it, it will, or bring it in, it will lift it up, and you want to be removing the tear down energy. And there's the main tool of the great physician is the tool of forgiveness. And yet most people don't want to go there, don't want to touch those memories because those memories contain too much unresolved trauma and pain. And so, the primary tool of forgiveness and then recognizing that the breath is a key. People who are in any form of trauma are never breathing what we would call normally, fully. There's always an inhibition in the breath. And so to recognize the role of the breath in the operation of the whole energy system, although someone who uses their senses might localize an impact to a particular part of the brain or a particular part of the body or what have you, to be able to think holistically and holographically about this energy system and its manifestations. Manifestation, it's interesting in the in the world today, there are these people that are out there, you know, doing the prosperity game and seeking to manifest what it is that they want with no idea that they're already manifesting what they want, because that's what the word manifest means in Aramaic. The word manifest means obvious. In other words, once something is obvious to you, it's the interplay between your thought processes and the concepts, the constructs you can make in your mind, and how the world organizes itself around your thoughts of what is obvious, including your own physiology. And what the forgiveness process does, wherever there's a particular energy that becomes obvious to you, and that obvious energy is a trauma or a disease within the structure, to be able to open that disease process, whether it's localized in the amygdala or the big toe, to be able to open those processes, and that takes a set of tools that the great physician taught. Primarily one was that there was a helper that in Aramaic was called Ruka Dukudsha, that the Greeks mistakenly turned into some kind of disembodied spirit being, but literally means that underlying all of this, for human benefit, there is a power that was called in Aramaic Ruka Dukudsha. And if we translate that from the Aramaic, we don't get the Holy Spirit. What we get is a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. Any given traumatic energy that one may engage in that creates a disease process, my offering is stored holistically, holographically, throughout the whole structure. One might see the amygdala light up. Now, if they're looking at an MRI with a particular thought process or a particular trauma, but the trauma might be happening in the liver. Just that part of the structure energetically is lighted up by the energy moving in the liver. And so to recognize that the energetic patterns that move within the structure move holistically throughout the structure, and it's something beyond what I'll offer what I sometimes call it as our pea brains, our little tiny awareness is just, you know, it's never even going to start to scratch the surface of understanding or figuring it out, but we can utilize the tools to undo those energetic patterns. And so any given trauma that one faces, if someone were, you know, doing an MRI on them and doing a scan of the whole structure at the same time, they might see that, you know, an energy is moving in the calf muscle that relates to an energy that's stored in the liver, that relates to a blow that happened to the right side of the head in the parietal lobes, that relates to the lighting up of the amygdala. And how's anybody going to ever figure out how to deal with all of that? Not in a million years. But that there is this literal elemental force in us that knows how to handle all that, that by definition is, it's a feminine, the word is gendered feminine in Aramaic, and it's she who undoes the effects of errors and teaches us the truth. And the distraction that the perceptual mind has is it's always trying to figure it out. Where, the number one pseudo-solution of that mind is trying to figure it out, and it can't be figured out. There's nobody that can comprehend. When you start recognizing the enormity of what the calf muscle is made of and the genes beneath that tissue, that relates to the liver, that relates to the parietal bone, that relates to the amygdala. You know, I mean, we might be able to start to say, oh, we can see that firing off, that fire. Boy, there's some relationship here, but it's so energetically beyond comprehension that rather than trying to figure it out, and that doesn't mean don't, you know, work toward understanding, but use the tool to confront what's there and move through the energy. Watch the, you know, as you work with people with these tools, if you work with yourself, you'll watch and you'll see particular places where things open, where something pops, and somebody can start to detail how, you know, the energy is moving in 14 different places in their structure and how it's all connected. You maybe seen that book, Everything We Need to Learn, we learned in kindergarten. And, one of the things we learned in kindergarten is the knee bone's connected to the thigh bone. And the problem isn't in the knee bone or the thigh bone, though that might be where the pain is. Again, the problem might be back in the liver. And it shows up as a lighted up part of the brain. So to me, the more important thing is, one of the things I'll often do when I go into a new group of people with whatever they're working on, they're studying a particular something, whether it's the Course in Miracles or the scriptures or whatever you, and in as big a letters as I can write on whatever surface I have to teach on, I'll write, don't study whatever that is. Stop studying the Bible. It's a waste of time. You're never going to figure it out. Do the work that it takes and recognize this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago said there's a protocol upon which the law and the prophets hang. And that protocol is another area of the brain called Rachma. And if that work isn't done first, we can look at that book and we can say, oh, see, look at this story. And we'll totally, completely read what our mind projects into that story and think that's what's in the book. But until Rachma's present, until that protocol is met, the words in that book mean nothing except whatever's inside of the mind of the person who thinks they're reading it. So it gives a protocol, and to follow the protocol, first order business, you have to do the work that it takes to make sure that this condition in the mind, this gateway for love to enter the human form, is open. And then, instead of reading the words in the book, your higher faculties will have a comprehension of what was being offered there, because the protocol has been met. But I can remember the weekend I started writing a new book. I was actually teaching Laws of Living in Heartland, and this is probably, I don't remember what year, but 27, 28 years ago. And the whole meaning of this passage of Rachma became clear to me. And, you know, if you hear the people say to Yeshua, you know, what's most important in the law? He doesn't say love your neighbor. He doesn't say love God as yourself. He says have Rachma when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self. And then there's a comma, and he says, for upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. In other words, till you get that, the law and the prophets aren't going to make sense. And I can remember, like, that was mind-blowing to me. That was mind-boggling. And that was such an exciting insight in terms of my own personal process. At the end of that weekend, when we finished that course, I got on the phone and I started to call different people that I knew that were in the religious life, ministers, a rabbi, priest, a nun. And I talked about that passage and asked, you know, what is that? What do you think? And there was not one of them. And I talked to, and I'm not even remember exactly what it was, somewhere between 100 and 200 years of quote-unquote religious life between ministers, priests, rabbi, what have you. And not one of them had a clue what that meant. Not one of them had a clue that this was the protocol for how to understand what's in that book. To do something other than read your mind's projections onto the book to actually get what it meant. And I mean, I literally talked to, and again, I don't remember if it was 100, maybe it was 200 years of religious experience, and couldn't find anybody that had a clue what it meant. That's when I started a book called, you know, The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken. It's now called The End of Suffering. It's something I'm still kind of working on in the background. It has not been completed. But there was a protocol for how to make sense of that, what was being presented in that text. And until the protocol's met, you know, the result isn't going to be there. You know, I know you've been doing a lot of healing work, and if you went to a doctor that you really trust, and the doctor said, okay, here's the protocol for healing what you need to deal with, would you thumb that person and say, I'm going to go do what I want to do? But that's what most people in the so-called religious world are doing. They either don't have a clue what it means, or they thumb it and say, why would I do that? Because everything hangs on it. If you want to understand it, if you don't have that, you don't have anything. Now, I'm thinking from some reading I've been doing recently that may be, and you can do a little Googling on this, that may be the angular gyrus in the brain, an area of the brain. That may be where Rachma is actually located. I'm not saying that definitively, but I'm suspecting that.
Interesting. Michael, thank you for reeling me in on the entire energy system. I'm still processing all that and certainly in good with following that. And just because we talk, like you mentioned, because we're talking about the amygdala doesn't mean that that's where we're a whole being. It doesn't mean exactly that's where the situation is being present. And I heard you mention this angular gyrus before. I need to look into that. I'm not familiar with that terminology or portion of the brain.
Well, when I said earlier, before you got on the show with us, when I said earlier, mm-hmm. It's like the last couple of years, I could literally take 18 hours a day and do nothing but research. And still, I spend a lot of time there, and the more I'm opening, the more it's like, God, I don't know a damn thing.
Oh, man.
I'm just scratching it. I've come to believe, if you've seen anything of this new telescope that they've got, out in space, that's showing us like beyond what we ever conceived of as when we conceived of this, mega universe that was out there, that it's so far beyond that. And I think that ultimately we as human beings are designed to be able to comprehend and work within all of that, which means we haven't even scratched the surface yet. We've been busy fighting each other and doing wars and dog eat dog and money and profit and, sex and rock and roll. Bread and circuses. The Greeks learned a long time ago that if you get, keep people entertained and keep their bellies full, you can keep them from ever inquiring of anything true. And when you do that, you can rob them blind. You can rule them, govern them, steal everything they have and leave them with a few, with a belly full of, nutrition-free food, which is essentially what there is in this culture. And they'll be literally, quite literally, fat and happy, or fat and angry, and then you can get them to do political violence and all kinds of things that have nothing whatsoever to do with that upon which hangs the law and all the prophets. You can keep them distracted.
We see much of that, like you mentioned, in present day and all through the centuries since. It's absolutely remarkable.
It is. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, thank you for your thoughts on that. There's a lot to still a lot to think about there, but it's
we're making progress.
Yes, step by step.
All right. Well, we're down to less than a minute, so the show is going to cut us off any second now. So I appreciate every inquiry that you make, and you know, keep pushing one and joining us, and that list of questions unfolding, and we'll do the best we can to interact, and you know, who knows what we'll all learn from every question you have to ask. And of course,
be with you all and listen.
Keep forgiving.
Yes.
All right, my friend. Have a blessed one. Lots of love. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.